Hello, everyone. This is Bill Vondahar with another edition of Moments in History. American History Magazine, October 2019, has an article written by Barbara Finley. It's called Shell Game. In 1938, pecan shellers in San Antonio stood up to that city's establishment. She begins with, on January 31st, 1938, a wildcat walkout by thousands of Latino workers, mostly women, rocked the west side of San Antonio, Texas. In that barrio, where many families depended on seasonal work shelling pecans to get through the winter, shellers set down their rudimentary tools at hundreds of shabby, overcrowded factories and took to the streets. The action came in response to an immediate and unilateral 20% cut in shellers' already skeletal wages by the region's dominant pecan distributor. The ensuing confrontation, which establishment San Antonio blamed on communist-inspired outside agitators, actually had arisen from local frustration with wages, working conditions, and harsh bias that characterized treatment of Latinos in that region and era. The strike came at a hinge moment for the pecan industry, and workers' gains proved fleeting. But for the Mexican-Americans living in San Antonio and vicinity, the action has continued to resound. The mention of Depression-era American labor strife usually summons images of skilled craftsmen in northern cities unionizing to force industrial behemoths to raise wages and improve working conditions, not of unskilled marginalized minorities and residents of southern states organizing successfully to improve their lot. That 1938 strike in San Antonio by just such workers evolved into one of the most important labor events in Texas and American history. The strikers were poor, mostly illiterate Spanish speakers without skills. At least half were female. The impact of their action, the largest walkout in Texas during the Depression and the first major successful strike by Mexican and Mexican-Americans or Tejano workers, resonated profoundly. What began as a spontaneous workout over slashed pay rates soon morphed into a full-fledged social movement, with repercussions that went far beyond considerations of wage levels in a single industry. That was written by historian John Weber in his 2015 book, From South Texas to the Nation. Surrounded for hundreds of miles by pecan groves, San Antonio was the historic center of the Texas pecan market, which was the centerpiece of American market for the nuts. Based on harvests from native trees along the rivers of Central and South Texas, the state led the nation in pecan production. Commercial pecan marketing began in the late 1800s, when Swiss-born candy maker and baker Alfred Delure began shipping shelled nuts to markets in the Northeast. In 1919, Texas named the pecan its state tree. By the 1920s, San Antonio was processing most of the pecans grown in Texas. Harvest and shelling season was between November and March. By cracking a nut without damaging the meat was no simple task. Originally, Delure's workers cracked nut shells with railroad spikes, after which young Latinas picked free the nut meats using heavy curved needles intended for sewing burlap. When a mechanical cracking machine debuted in 1889, Delure adopted it. In 1914, crackers began to be electrified. By the 1920s, power crackers were standard. That device supplied enough pressure to shatter the shell without harming the meat, which still had to be separated from the shell's soft interior. Young Latinas picked nut meat by hand. In 1926, bucking a nationwide trend towards automation, Julius Siegelman and Joe Freeman founded Southern Pecan Shelling Company. Their outfit's picking line was manual, with men doing the cracking and women the shelling. Enterprising crackers used a purpose-built tool, a wooden handle with metal teeth at its business end and a short spike on one side. But most sellers Schellers improvised, adopting whatever was handy, like cobbler's needles intended for stitching leather. A picker working a 51-hour week and paid by the pound earned a little more than $2. By the 1930s, half the nation's shelled pecans were coming from San Antonio. Southern pecan was handling about half the Texas crop and shelling about 40% of pecans sold in the United States. In 1939, the U.S. Department of Labor reported that during the 1935-1936, Southern pecan profits exceeded $500,000. Today, that's $9 million plus. By avoiding outlays for machines and subcontracting shelling under tight controls, the company had built a monopoly. Contractors bought whole pecans from Southern Pecan and sold clean nut meat to Southern Pecan at a scant profit. Besides setting prices, Southern Pecan dictated wages and other parameters, blacklisting contractors who strayed. Pecans were not a pillar of the local economy, but for the city's poorest Latino residents, most of whom lived on the west side, nut processing was a key source of income, earned seasonally in rough sheds optimistically labeled factories. In the early 1930s, the West Side counted some 400 pecan factories that at season's height employed as many as 20,000 workers. A few families shelled at home, with all hands cracking nuts, but most shelling took place in ramshackle buildings around the barrio, home to mostly impoverished Mexican citizens and Tejanos who wintered there between stints as migrant cotton and sugar beet harvesters. The West Side Barrio, 4 miles square, was among the country's worst slums. Audrey Graneberg characterized housing there as floorless shacks renting at $2 to $8 per month, crowded together in crazy fashion on nearly every lot. They are mostly without plumbing, sewage connections, or electric lights. Open, shallow wells are often situated only a few feet away from unsanitary privies. Streets and sidewalks are unpaved and become slimy mud holes in rainy weather. Nearly 80% of West Side households had only kerosene lamps for lighting. A higher percentage cooked over open fires, subsisting mainly on tortillas and beans. Fewer than 20% of barrio homes had access to potable water, and only about 10% had indoor plumbing. In some blocks, 50 families shared a single outhouse. Scarcity of running water discouraged bathing and hand washing, multiplying health problems. The neighborhood was rife with malnutrition and tuberculosis and infant mortality. High unemployment, racism, and wage discrimination complicated these factors. In addition to competition for jobs from a constant stream of new immigrants, resident migrant agricultural workers returned each winter to their homes on the west side, ballooning the unemployment rate. Historically, two industries in the barrio hired low-skill Latinos: Frick Cigars and a cluster of garment shops. Both paid better than pecan shelling. Early in the Depression, San Antonio cigar and garment workers tried to organize, gaining minor benefits amid fierce suppression by city police. San Antonio native Emma Taniyuka emerged from these efforts as a strong, audacious leader. Adept at public speaking and organizing, Taniyuka was only 16 years old in 1933 when she joined the women striking Frick Cigars for better wages, improved working conditions, and recognition of their union. Arrested and jailed, Taniyuka stood firm, a year later helping to organize a garment workers' strike. Taniyuka took up other causes, joining an umbrella entity, the Workers' Alliance, organized to fight low wages, ethnic and gender discrimination in wages, and cuts to Works Progress Administration relief roles. Among Taniyuka's campaigns were efforts to obtain government funding clothing, school supply, and free lunches for children whose parents were on relief. In 1937, Tanayuka joined the Communist Party, less out of its international ideology than for the practical reason that no one else but the Communists expressed any interest in helping San Antonio's dispossessed Mexicans. Pecan shelling not only paid less than rolling cigars and sewing, but subjected workers to harsher conditions. Shellers sat elbow to elbow on unpadded, backless benches 8 to 10 hours per day. It was not unusual for 100 people to cram a room 25 feet by 40 feet, working in dim light from windows opened only in good weather. Shellers were packed wall to wall, shoulder to shoulder, with people sitting at benches to shell the peanuts, old people, young people, children from the earliest age, sick people, well people, bad people, good people. A man who had shelled pecans as a boy told historian Matthew Keyworth, whole families worked there 10, 12, 14 hours daily to together bring home enough pay to keep body and soul together. Shelling generated a fine brown dust that filled the factory air and entered workers' lungs, exacerbating already rampant asthma and tuberculosis. Until 1936, when San Antonio mandated installation of running water and indoor toilets, most factories lacked those facilities, and even after the regulation took effect, had only one toilet for all workers. Shell splinters caused cuts and infections. Shellers earned a piece rate gauged by weight and quality. Fragments had to be of a certain size to count, averaging 8 to 9 pounds of pecan meats per day at 6 to 7 cents per pound. A family of four earned about $192 per year. Full-time workers averaged $2.50 weekly, and the typical two-worker family unit averaged about 69 cents per day, according to a government study. Labor Department data showed that from September 1 to December 31st, 1937, the highest-paid Southern pecan workers averaged less than $3 a week. In 1938, unskilled male industrial workers averaged about $15 to $20 a week. In season, shellers put in at least 6 9- to 10-hour days a week, but that was only late November through March. Most relied on municipal relief in order to survive. During the San Antonio winter, shelling was all the work that there was, an ill-paid and grueling necessity, and until the Depression clamped down, the province of women and a few elderly or disabled men. The worsening economy during the Depression forced able-bodied men onto the shelling benches for many a humiliating experience, said Alberta Snid, who shelled pecans as a child. Men had to come in and sit next to a family to do the work, said Snid. You take, for example, my father. I think that as a last resort, he had to go in and shell pecans. He was a very proud man, but he had to leave his pride behind and to go in there and sit next to us to earn a living because there was nothing else. Access to this captive winter labor force was why Sigelman decided in 1926 to forego modernizing his production lines. The company's shellers occasionally protested conditions and pay, and in the early 1930s tried twice to organize in campaigns cut short by fierce resistance from Southern Pecan and San Antonio officials. In November 1937, the new Congress of Industrial Organization, the CIO, chartered the Texas Pecan Shelling Workers Union, led by Albert Gonson. In San Antonio, members of that union formed Local 172. Soon, one of the most important labor conflicts in Texas history had gotten underway. On Monday, January 31, 1938, Southern Pecan contractors, at Julius Sigelman's direction, cut the rate paid shellers per pound for pieces and halves from 6 and 7 cents, respectively, to 5 and 6 cents, reducing a punitive low wage by nearly 20%. As soon as word of this spread, thousands of shellers spontaneously walked off the job. Statewide shelling workers organizer Gonson had first hesitated to involve his union, but as more shellers hit the bricks, Local 172 joined the Wildcat strike. Shellers not only were protesting pay cuts, but also seeking union recognition and the right to bargain collectively on their own behalf. They demand that factories restore wage rates pending arbitration. By mid-February, at 130 Westside plants, over half the shellers, mostly women, were on strike and had joined Local 172. Emma Tenayuka, now 22 years old, was elected as a primary leader. She allied with fellow activists Maria Sager, Minnie Rendon, and others. Tenayuka's youth was no hindrance, but to avoid red-baiting over her Communist Party history, the national union leadership muzzled her. Even so, many strikers continued to look to her for direction. Austin Beasley, an experienced CIO organizer with no communist ties, ran the strike. Beasley headed the all-male strike committee, with Tenayuka staging daily meetings, writing and distributing circulars, and encouraging strikers by getting food to their family. Arrested on charges of communist agitation, she spent time in the county jail. Opposing the strike were San Antonio's civic pillars, the Democratic political machine and police, the Roman Catholic hierarchy, and the press. The Mexican-American Chamber of Commerce attempted to downplay the action's size and impact. The city blamed outside agitators for whipping up the citizenry. Major C.K. Quinn and his police department went after strikers legally and illegally. Officers tear-gassed, whipped, and clubbed strikers, claiming to be enforcing a law requiring the city marshal, an office that no longer existed, to appease advertisements. Police declared pickers' signs illegal, arresting those carrying placards and destroying the signs. Police officers entered homes to threaten strikers with arrest or deportation unless they returned to the shelling bench. Officers harassed and arrested men and women, young and old, able and disabled. The city deputized municipal firefighters armed with clubs to assist them. In the course of 6 weeks, city authorities arrested more than 1,000 people on charges of blocking sidewalks, carrying signs without permits, assembling unlawfully, and the like. Police sometimes crammed 30 prisoners into a cell designed to hold four, turning fire hoses on those who protested. When the county jail could hold no more, officers hauled arrested persons into the scrub outside of town and abandoned them there. Jailed strikers could be heard at night singing Spanish-language verses to Solidarity Forever and We Shall Not Be Moved. According to San Antonio Police Chief Owen Kilday, outsiders and communists were trying to stir insurrection on the west side. Kilday said he would use any means to defeat the troublemakers, a stance a Labor Department official described as subterfuge. Incident of strike-related violence was almost entirely instigated by San Antonio's law enforcement establishment, historian John Weber said. Local newspapers sided mostly with the authorities, in editorials poo-pooing the action's insignificance and condemning unions and workers for undertaking the action. In spite of or because of such establishment resistance, the protests grew, attracting attention outside of San Antonio that came to focus on police abuse. In February, Texas Governor James Allred asked the State Industrial Commission to investigate. Mayor Quinn locked state investigators out of city offices. The county gave them working space in a courthouse. 2 days of testimony from both sides led the panel to conclude unanimously that the police had no basis for their violent behavior and that strikers were raising legitimate issues. The commission specifically objected to police refusal to permit peaceful assembly in locations hired for that purpose, forcible return of workers to the shelling bench under the threat of arrest, and destruction of union signs and buttons. City leaders ignored the report. Coverage of and protests about the situation spread. CIO organizer George Lambert described how city police actions attracted the notice of Mexican government officials when police clubbed a 60-year-old woman carrying her grandchild past a West Side shelling factory. The woman who was beaten, a citizen of Mexico, was not even a striker. She was on her way to buy groceries. Mexican diplomats protested this and other strike-related incidents to the United States State Department, the first time a foreign government had registered such a complaint against an American city's police. The San Antonio Light reported that Mexican counsel contacted Governor Allred on behalf of the Mexican government to protest the arrest in San Antonio of 63 Mexican citizens. Learning of Scheller's wretched pay while in town, Labor Secretary Francis Perkins asked publicly, "Do you in San Antonio call that wages?" Time and other national periodicals covered the strike. Caustic radio and newspaper coverage, pressure from Governor Allred, and the strikers' own resilience forced the city and Southern Pecan Company to accept arbitration. On March 9, 1938, slightly more than 5 weeks after the Wildcat walkout, Sigelman agreed to recognize International Pecan Worker Local 172 as the sole bargaining agent for San Antonio Schellers. Pending arbitration, workers returned to the benches. Arbitrators reset the Schellers' wage at 5.5 and 6.5 cents per pound of pieces in halves from June 1st to November 1st, 1938, when the rate would return to the pre-strike level of 6 and 7 cents per pound. As November 1st neared, Congress enacted the Fair Labor Standards Act, stipulating a national minimum wage of 25 cents per hour. This was more than triple the arbitrated shelling wage, making hand shelling much more expensive than automated shelling. Southern Pecan Company tried and failed to obtain an exemption from the minimum wage. The company installed shelling machines. By March 1939, Southern Pecan was employing only 1,800 workers. By 1941, those ranks had shrunk to 600. Around 10,000 workers lost their seasonal jobs, and Pecan Schellers Local 172 withered to nothing. During the long-term negatives, many observers thought the action a victory, but it engendered solidarity and cultural identification. The Pecan Schellers strike was about more than wages. Those who remember it do not talk of the wage increase or even of the workers who ultimately and permanently lost jobs in the industry. They remember a mass movement, and the common comparison is to the civil rights marches of the 1960s. Westsiders changed political attitudes, remade San Antonio politics. No longer were Latino citizens willing to sell their votes to the bosses. And for a time, the dominant political machine lost traction. The 1939 San Antonio mayoral election saw incumbent Quinn, the boss's pick, oppose progressive Maury Maverick. Campaigning vigorously on the West Side, Maverick garnered many votes there on the West Side, and the process seeking his surname came to mean a disruptive upstart. Maverick beat Quinn, and as mayor 1939-1941, he improved conditions in the West Side. During his one term, Maverick did much to honor the city's Mexican heritage. Blacklisted Emma Tenayuca was run out of San Antonio. In San Francisco, California, she studied education at San Francisco State College, returning to San Antonio for a master's degree, spending her career teaching in the hometown's Harlandale School District. She retired in 1982 and died in 1999. The Pecan Schellers strike empowered a community previously mired in passivity. We learned that through organization, we could do something, striker Alberto Sanid told a interviewer. Maybe we didn't win that much as far as money was concerned, but we learned that being united is power. We forgot a little bit of the fear that we had, because before we couldn't say nothing, we couldn't talk, period. Afterwards, it was entirely different. Some changes came and went. In 1941, accusations of communist fellow Travelton got Maverick booted from office. The barrio stayed poor. Most pecan-shelling jobs vanished. But many former strikers recalled with great pride their days standing up to the city machine and to the Southern Pecan Company, and most held on to their sense of community and dignity arising from that action. Emma Tanayuca is celebrated as a hero of Latino civil rights in Texas, remembered primarily for her stand on behalf of the Shellers and other dispossessed Tejanos in Depression-era San Antonio. And that's the end of the article that is written by Barbara Finley. It's entitled Shell Game. In 1938, Pecan Shellers in San Antonio stood up to that city's establishment. That was in the American History Magazine, October 2019. And that is the end of our time today, and we appreciate you listening. And anytime you have any suggestions or ideas, please give us a call. But until next time, this is Bill Von Nahar with Moments in History. Thank you for listening.